Hi, I'm Talissa.
And I'm Rachel, and this is Transatlantic Crime, a true crime podcast that covers stories from each side of the pond. Every week, we will both cover a separate story with a running theme.
Disclaimer, this podcast will contain swearing and details that some people may find offensive. If you are of a sensitive disposition, listener discretion is advised.
Welcome to Transatlantic Crime.
So close.
I have a question for you.
Go on then. What's your question?
Well, this is a question and a comment because this is something that we completely missed talking about on last week's episode, even though our episode came out on the day that it happened.
Bad British citizen.
For our listeners, we ended the episode and then we were both like, oh shit, we forgot to talk about this. And then we spent the next like 45 minutes talking about it. So, how was the Queen's funeral, Talissa?
The Queen died.
Yeah.
And I completely skipped past
it.
I just didn't say anything.
Yeah.
What an awful citizen. But no, to make up for that, I did watch all of the funeral.
What a great citizen.
Me, Tom and Carly were all sat on the sofa watching it, and it started at 11 and it didn't finish until like 1 or 2, I don't think. It was pretty good. The bagpipes were interesting.
Yeah.
But then you got loads of good celeb spots as well when everyone walked in.
Oh, yeah.
Who's the Canadian Prime Minister? Justin Trudeau.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Saw him. And then it was really weird, like Camilla was stood there next to Charles and she was singing God Save the King.
Yeah.
Like when the Queen was buried, they say God Save the King and she stood there singing it next to him and he's just silent because obviously he is the king, right. So he doesn't have to sing it.
Yeah.
That was weird.
There must be so many little things like that where they have to be debriefed before it happens. Like, oh, Camilla can sing it, but King Charles, you can't sing. At that point, you know, like just little things like that. Right. Yeah. You don't have to sing, but everyone else should, you know, just like little things like that, that nobody thinks about, but you have to know going in so that everything looks pristine.
Oh, it's all perfect. Like they're basically the pallbearers that were holding our coffin. Like, did you see it?
Yeah.
Like they shuffle,
right?
Like they walk, they like shuffle like one step at a time away, even though they haven't got the coffin anymore, so it looks really neat. It's really weird.
It's like choreography. They probably had to practice that.
Yeah, definitely. And they all have to be like the same height as well. Because obviously a regular funeral, if you have a pallbearer, they're all different heights because they're just friends and family and stuff.
Right.
Whereas all of these guys were like 21, 22, and they were like in the army or the navy or whatever, or the RAF. And they were just chosen because they performed really well to carry the Queen's casket. The fucking pressure.
Right.
And it's lead lined. It weighs like 200 pounds.
Wow.
We were Googling like all the people who have different hats and all what regiments that they're in.
Right.
So there's some people who had like ostrich feathers on their hats and they're like some sort of old Queen's Guard and like all this stuff. Super interesting.
Yeah. Everything's so detailed.
And the carriage that carried, it's all like proper pageantry. And the coffin was wheeled on what was originally like a gun mounted, like you would mount a gun on it. It's like called an artillery.
Like a big machine gun or cannon or something.
Yeah.
Okay, gotcha.
Yeah, yeah. But obviously they take that off and put the coffin on and then they wheel it on that.
That'd be bad if they just kept it on. Like, just throw it on top.
Be badass. So she's like the queen of the army, you know, like she commands the army. Well, she doesn't, but you know, whatever.
Right.
So they had her on that. And it's the same one that Queen Victoria was on.
Oh, wow.
And it's the same one that Princess Diana was on.
Yeah.
But they started using it for royal funerals in Queen Victoria's reign.
Mm.
We were so into the royal funeral vibe that we started YouTubing Diana's funeral.
Oh.
Now that was a funeral.
Yeah.
She had fucking Elton John. Mm. Like his performance was mwah.
Yeah.
And they had Earl Spencer, her brother, did like a really like shady speech being like, the boys are going to be brought up normally, like fuck the royal family.
Yeah.
Like it was like EastEnders in a funeral.
Wow.
It was crazy, like watching it back. the Queen's funeral, all the speeches were just vicars.
Yeah.
From like the Protestant church.
No family members.
The Church of England.
Which is kind of, it's just indicative of like what kind of person she was. She was such a stickler for like rules and traditions and not marring the family name or emotions.
She's done her best to try. Like, but it was so embarrassing. Like Andrew was there and he had none of his fancy shit on.
Yeah.
And everyone else did.
Good.
And Harry was there and he didn't have his fancy shit on either. Mm. And it was like, he's not in like the nonce category. He just quit. He quit. He wasn't forced to quit.
Right. He's just trying to live a normal, happy family life. And you're kind of punishing him for that, which is sad.
Yeah, it was weird seeing those two without all their fancy gold shit on. Oh, we were also laughing because there was like a choir boys that sang. It was beautiful, like the choir and stuff. And then there was this close up of one kid and there was a like a red lamp that was right in front of his face. Oh. And we were like, imagine if you were his mum and you were like, oh, it's my boy's moment.
Yeah.
Wait there. Oh, and there's like lamp in front of the face.
Like, here's my
solo. We were
wetting
ourselves at that. Yeah. They're like, wait, get the video camera. Nope.
That'll be a framed picture in their house of just a light bulb in front of him.
We were wetting ourselves at that, And then Charlotte, so the Williams kids, Charlotte and George, Louis wasn't allowed at the funeral,
which is
fucking hilarious. Because he's like four.
Yeah.
And he's famous for like
messing,
slapping Kate in the face, making faces. Like at the Queen's 70th, he was like pulling his fingers at the side of his lips and like pulling his mouth out and is sticking his tongue out. So you know that, like, that face Bart Simpson does.
Yeah.
Louis was doing that on the balcony on the Queen's like 70th. He was banned from the funeral.
I think that's why you need to have kids at funerals, because you need to have that lightness that it's
he's going to do like, something mental.
Yeah. It's just like, it's fine. Let the kids be kids and let them go through this funeral. Yeah. Like, let them experience a funeral. And I'm just going on a little rant here. But like, that's kind of sad.
Yeah. But George and Charlotte like sat, and George is 9 and Charlotte's 7. And they sat there for like 2 hours perfectly, which is astounding, really.
Yeah.
It just goes to show that George is set for a life of standing around.
Right. Well, just like his dad.
Being quiet. Yeah. Looking into the distance. Right. Like, they also did like a little lip reading where Charlotte, the little girl, is stood next to George. And as the coffin goes past, she goes, "You need to bow."
Aww.
And it's so cute. Like, she's like telling him what to do.
Oh.
I think he probably knew that anyway. Yeah. But, you know, little girls are like, I know what to do. Yeah. You need to do this. Yeah.
Hey brother, remember to do this.
Really funny though, like one of our friends' mums was meant to visit them and they were like, "I can't make it, I'm just too upset about the Queen."
Oh.
We were like, what the fuck.
I mean, some people were really affected by it, right?
I think it's just a kick in the bollocks when we've had a bit of a shitter,
right?
Basically. I think it's like, oh, for fuck's sake, something else is changing. Someone was saying, we've got a bloody male prime minister, and now we've got a fucking male queen. Like, what is going on? Like, everything's changing.
Yeah. It's all reversing back to 150 years ago, sadly.
Yeah. Like, in a week, we had, like, a new prime minister who is a fucking weird vampire woman.
Yeah.
And then but now Prince Charles, the money's going to change.
Oh.
It's too much.
Yeah.
Alessandra, our mutual friend, was like, "Will you please save me a £5 note?" I was like, "Yeah." They're going to be around for a while. We don't just burn them all. They have to phase in.
Right. It's like quarters. Like, we have all different quarters. It's not like we just got rid of.
Oh, do they have the president on?
No, the quarters are different states. Like, I think about maybe 20 years ago, they started printing quarters that were from each state, like had a picture from each state. But there's still quarters from before that time that just had the standard whatever was on a regular quarter.
That's exciting. I'm gonna look at my, see if I've got any American money left.
Oh yeah, you should check.
You're like, that's not exciting, but whatever.
There was a time where like they were releasing them over the years, so some people were collecting one from each state, and it was kind of like Pokemon cards. It was like, oh, I got Hawaii.
I'm a fucking geek. I love that idea. I think it's really cool. Which reminds me, actually, I watched a thing the other day about slot machines.
Okay.
And I can't remember the name of the guy, but it was like, Tom was watching it weirdly, like a YouTube documentary about this guy. And he had different mechanical things that he would put in the slot machines and it would like instantly give you the jackpot.
Whoa.
Yeah, you can get like this, it's like a little fork thing. And that was on the old fashioned ones. And then they made new ones that had like infrared light in. And then you had to get like a little mini mirror and put that in and fuck the light up. And then that gave you the jackpot. Oh. And like every time, yeah, like every time the slot machines invented a new system, he would break it. It was so fun. And then we were inspired by that. And then we watched Casino. Oh, if you ever seen that film.
Nice. Yeah. Classic.
Yeah. It's a good film, right? That's a true crime story.
Maybe we should do an episode soon. Movies based on true crime.
Mob stuff.
Or mob.
You know, I love the mob.
Do you have any true crime news or recommendations that you've had this week?
I have been asked by about 6 people, are you going to watch the Jeffrey Dahmer thing on Netflix? Yep. You know, they've got like a drama.
Yes.
I still keep calling it like a Dahmer drama. Drama Dahmer. Oh, no. I'm like, okay, so there's 3 serial killers for me who I can't fucking take.
I agree.
And that is him, Albert Fish, and Dennis Nilsson. Mm-hmm. They are 2 fucking eating parts of their victims for me to deal with. Yep. And I'm a fucking ghoul. I will listen to anything, but it just gives me the absolute gip. Mm-hmm. Like, I was reading Killing for Company, which is about Dennis Nilsson, and I had to stop reading it because I was like, it's fucking grim.
Yeah. And if our listeners who've been with us for a long time have listened to past episodes where I tell a few stories about people eating their victims, and Talissa was not happy.
Stop eating people. Yeah. Kill them, or I feel like, I don't know, you either kill people because like you hate them or you want to fuck them and no one find out or you want their money, but eating them.
Yeah.
And then it's a creepy, like, I want them to be part of me. Ugh.
Right. And that's all, like, if you watch the trailer, like, I agree with you. I don't think I can watch this series, but I was talking about it with my friend, and obviously we're from Minnesota, and this is based in Wisconsin, which is the next state over. Their accents are really good.
Are they? I might watch a little bit of it.
Yeah.
Just to see the accent. Yeah.
If you watch the trailer, that's what they focus on, is just his creepiness of like wanting to be a part of, like he's holding hands with the victim or like and eating and all that kind of stuff. So that's as far as I think I can go, is just watching the trailer of it.
Yeah. Who's your like serial killers you can't deal with? I think you said it was Ted Bundy, didn't you? Or like somebody like that.
No, Jeffrey Dahmer is definitely one of them. And I think anyone who deals with like kids, I don't think I can go there. I don't like going there.
Like Rodney Alcala, he killed like he nearly killed a little girl.
Right.
And that was fucking grim.
I think I did a story on him. I can't remember. I think we might have done an episode
maybe
on him. The dating game killer.
Oh, we've talked about it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We've definitely talked about it. Yeah.
I also kind of don't like people who take photos. Like that really freaks me out as
Again,
well.
Jeffrey Dahmer.
Yeah, exactly. And he's like playing about with bits of them, like, ugh.
Yeah.
Like makes a shrine out of their fucking bones and stuff. Ugh. Just fucking gross. So I won't be watching that.
They do a really good job of making Evan Peters look like Jeffrey Dahmer. He does look very similar.
He does look like him.
Yeah.
Yeah. I've seen a picture and he does fucking look like him.
Who I actually saw, I saw him in a bar this past year.
Oh, really?
Yeah. He's like my height. I was expecting him to be taller. I think in the show they make him look taller.
All actors are short. Like, that's just how it goes.
Except for Jason Momoa. He's not short. Which is fine.
No, and Armie Hammer isn't short either, which is really annoying.
Yeah.
Because he's grim. No, he's not short because the girl in the documentary, in Armie Hammer, is like, oh, I was expecting him to be short, but he's really tall. Mm. Like when you meet him, he's really tall and big.
Yeah.
And I think for actors, people are like, oh, he's an actor, so he's going to be teeny tiny. I'm rewatching Game of Thrones.
Mm.
I'm just like, oh, Kit Harington, what a lovely face. And I'm like, he's about 5'8".
Yeah. Damn it. Although, such a no, shame. not to shit on anyone who's like short. There's still great guys out there that are short.
I know, but then I feel stupid stood next to them in heels. I feel like a gargoyle. I feel like Jason Momoa when I'm stood next to them in heels. That's my problem. That's why I can't go out with Kit Harington, even though he's obviously called me and offered. So, and I just had to say, sorry, Kit. Yeah. It's not going to happen.
Sorry. You know? We're the same height. We can't do
this. I know you're offering to dump your wildling girlfriend, but, you know, just stick with her. It might work out.
I have been watching, or I just finished, a true crime documentary. There's no murder in it, but it's called The Real Bling Ring. Have you seen it?
Oh, I've not heard of this. No.
So do you know about the Bling Ring, that whole story?
No.
Back in like 2000, I think it was 2009-ish. This will probably sound familiar, but there were some teenagers that went around Hollywood and they broke into famous people's homes and they stole from them. So they went to Paris Hilton's house. They went to Orlando Bloom's, Lindsay Lohan, like all the big stars of that time. And they stole from them and they got in trouble for it. And it was just this whole big story because they very easily broke into these people's homes.
Yeah.
For Paris Hilton's, they were like, oh, we just walked up to the door and opened it and it was open and we walked straight in. Yeah. They went several times and they were like, yeah, and the next time that we went, the door was locked, but then we just looked under the doormat and the key was there. So we just used the key to get in.
Paris, come on.
I know.
I think, like, wouldn't you hazard a guess and say that celebrities in, like, Beverly Hills and that kind of area just feel safe because they're surrounded by other celebrities?
That, and also most of them live in gated communities, so there's usually a like a doorman, or like a, when you drive in, one of my friends, her grandma lives in one of these communities, and when you want to go to that house in a normal way, you drive up and there's like a driveway with like a doorman kind of person. And they say like, oh, who are you here for? And you say like, I'm here to see you, blah, blah. And then they let you in and take down your name and you drive up to the house. But for these teenagers, they just use like hiking, you know, like the Hollywood Hills. There's lots of hiking around there. Mm. They would just hike up and like scale a wall and then get into the gated community.
Oh my God.
That way. This happened like almost 20 years ago. And it's just the story of what happened. And then they made, Sofia Coppola made a movie called The Bling Ring with, who plays the girl from Harry Potter?
Oh.
Emma Watson.
Emma Watson.
Yeah. So she's in The Bling Ring. They do a whole like reenactment of it.
And she looks young too. So she looks like a teenager.
Exactly. Yeah. So it's just a story. If you want to watch a true crime story told by the people who actually committed the crimes, then
like a heist,
kind of like a teenage heist that it wasn't that amazing, but it just recounts,
sounds
like
interesting,
how they got into it, how they got in trouble, how you know, it was all over the news. I would recommend it.
I'd like to see the show because I'm sure they recreate like the inside of mansions, and like that would be fun.
Well,
to watch.
It's funny because when they made the movie based on this story and they filmed, Paris Hilton let them film in her house where it happened.
She is so fun. She's just the most fun ever.
She's just smart. Her whole thing is just staying
super
relevant.
Chill.
That's how you stay
she
relevant.
Was at Britney Spears's wedding. Like, she's just still around somehow.
Yeah, she talks to all of her fans on Instagram. She loves them.
She looks precisely the same as she did
does.
20 years ago.
Yep.
She has not changed. One fucking line has not appeared on her face. It's insanity.
Amazing. Yeah.
When you watch back shows like The Osbournes or like The Simple Life, you know, her and Nicole Richie.
Yeah.
They are so funny now.
Yeah.
Like, me and Carly went through a stage of watching The Osbournes, and it really holds up.
Well, it's funny that you mentioned that, because the documentary, and it's on Netflix, they talk about this because one of the girls who went and stole from Orlando Bloom got a reality show, and she was filming that reality. It's called Pretty Wild. It was one of the first reality shows It was like when the Kardashians started, and so it was in the same kind of vein as it, and they were filming when this girl got arrested.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
So she was kind of like a mini celebrity when she was doing
it. She was, and that's what some of this documentary is about like what society was like at that time and how they created celebrities out of people who did nothing, or like people nothing. Like Paris Hilton.
Or,
exactly. So she was in that sphere of it.
Yeah, God, that's crazy. I keep seeing as well, Jack Osborne's got a show all about ghosts. Like, he's obsessed yeah. with ghosts. Have you seen that? Like,
yeah, didn't he talk about UFOs as well, maybe, I think?
Yeah, right? He's obsessed with the paranormal. Like, he's got loads of shows about it yeah. and stuff. I kind of want to watch it, but I just love him and Kelly together. I just love, like, their family dynamic yeah. rather than them on their own.
Right.
Because I feel like they're super Hollywood. Like, him and Kelly are, like, they grew up on fucking Sunset Boulevard, right. like, going out with fake IDs and stuff. Yeah. And then they've got Ozzy and Sharon, who are just really fucking British.
Yeah.
Like... like there's a bit where Kelly was saying about how she's wearing a thong.
I remember that.
Sharon's like, you're gonna get a fucking yeast infection. Yeah. And she's like, I don't have a yeast infection. She goes, well, you're fucking gonna. I was like, that's so British.
It like, is. I love that too. Yeah, it's so funny.
That's it. That for true crime, like I've also been revisiting Criminal. I wanted some really nice soothing voice, mm-hmm. but not boring.
Yeah.
Phoebe Judge. Mm-hmm. was
so good.
I went back to Phoebe Judge and she was saying all about one really interesting one was they were talking about alligators.
Okay.
How they found an arm in like a swamp in Florida. Ooh. And then they have to get divers to go in and search for the rest of the body.
Mm-hmm.
But obviously the dangers are alligators.
Yeah.
And it was super interesting. They were saying that if there's a body around, like usually alligators will ignore you,
mm.
but if there's a rotting body, they see that as a food source.
Mm.
So if you go in and try and collect that body, they think you're trying to steal their food.
Oh.
So they'll attack you for that.
Wow.
They won't just attack you like for a laugh.
Yeah.
They attack you because they think you're getting into their food.
Wow.
So they have a... I was like, how the fuck do you protect yourself against an alligator? And in true American style, they were like, somebody stands on the top of a van with an AK-47 oh like, pointed God. In the water. That's so Florida.
It is.
Yeah, and they were saying, like, because it's really misty water, mm-hmm. they can't see an alligator coming for you,
yeah.
but they can see their tails and their back, their spinal things on their back make, like, a trail through the water.
Yeah.
So they have to look for that.
Right.
They have to look for little air bubbles, and they have That's to so look scary. For the water being disturbed. shit. Scared. And apparently the guy who dives for the body parts was saying you can't see anything.
Mm.
You just have, because the mud gets disturbed and then you can't see anything. So you just have to trust somebody on the van is going to shoot a fucking alligator if it comes for you. And then
it's giving me anxiety saying, like right now. Like I'm scared that an alligator is going to jump out at me right now.
I know, they're petrifying. And then it was saying that he puts his hands in the water and he just has to search for something under the water. And he's like, it could be a log, it could be a corpse, it could be another. It could be an alligator. Yeah. I'm just searching for it.
It sounds very similar to the amazing Criminal episode where they go to the
La Brea tar pits.
Yeah, the tar pits, and this guy has to search for evidence, and he's just like,
that's absurd.
See in front of me.
Well, no, you're in tar. Yeah. That's insane.
At least there were no alligators insane. There.
We went to the La Brea tar pits,
we did.
And if you wanted to chuck a weapon away, you would throw it in that fucking tar pit.
Yeah. Never seen again.
It's never coming out.
No.
No. That's gone. I mean, a body might take a while to sink, but a weapon you could probably get rid of.
Yeah. Any kind of... Well, we won't give people advice on how to get rid of evidence.
Like we're the experts.
In LA.
Yeah.
But yeah, that sounds like a similar episode. I'll definitely have a listen to that. And I'm still chugging along with American Scandal. Another amazing voice
doing
to listen
God's work.
To. Phoebe Judge and Lindsey Graham both have amazing voices. It's like drinking a cup of mocha. That's how it's like
it's
listening
lovely.
To their voices.
Yeah, and I don't know if my voice is annoying or not.
Right.
Like, I don't think it's too vocal. I don't think I have vocal fry, and I don't think I'm too shrill. I think my laugh could probably get a bit shrill, but for the most part, I think my voice is okay to listen to.
If but you were I'm to no Lissa, judge. This podcast would have ended a long time ago because
yeah.
I am so sensitive to sound that if I was editing your voice and my voice and I was like, I don't like the sound of your voice, then I would this have is stopped not a good it noise. A long time ago.
Would you have been like, your voice is like nails down a blackboard? No. Or would you have been like, I am swamped. I just can't. My house burnt down.
Yeah.
My computer set on fire.
I don't know. Yeah, my computer broke. I don't know if I could do this anymore.
And it will be broken for the foreseeable future.
Yes.
Goodbye.
Yeah. Sorry. Yeah.
No, I think our voices are nice.
Yeah. Well, listeners, let us know yeah. if you like our voices. Then
does my voice annoy you?
Yeah. Hopefully not.
Why are we opening this door? Right. Why are we doing this? I don't want to know.
Give us compliments. That's what we're asking for.
Do you love me? Write in.
All right. We've been
That's
talking
all
for,
I'm appealing for.
We've been talking for half an hour now. I think okay. we should get into our theme this week, part two.
I'm so excited because you know how I love these stories.
Yes.
sure.
Okay. So our theme this week and last week is cold cases that have been recently solved. This is one of your favorite themes because justice has been served.
It's so satisfying.
Yeah.
It's so satisfying. See an old man, it's always an old man, to see an old man peeled out of his chair and put in prison at 74.
You'll find out about this guy. We'll find out. All right. So my story is about Sophie Sergey. This is a story that takes place in Alaska. So Sophie Sergey was born in 1973 in Pitcus Point, a territory in Alaska that sits along the Yukon River. It is a super rural place. The last census in 2020 had a population of 130 people.
What the fuck? Mm-hmm.
So back in the 70s, when Sophie Sergey was born, it was about half that. There was about 70 people in this territory. It's kind of a large territory.
Wow.
So just to illustrate how Sophie grew up, just very rurally, Sophie was part of the Yupik tribe, a Native American tribe that lived in Alaska since the beginning of time, for 3,000 years. Like, that was part of her lineage. She was extremely bright. She was considered a role model for others in her village. She was hardworking. And as she grew older, she set her sights on joining the Navy. Because also a lot of people join the military here because you get free education out of it.
Do you get free options. Like free healthcare and stuff?
Yeah, you get that too. You get all kinds of things. So that is for people who are like lower class, working class, that's always an option for them because how else are they going to pay for college? Unfortunately, Sophie was only 4'9", so she was disqualified from joining the Navy, so that was kind of squashed. Instead, she focused on becoming a marine biologist since she loved sea life and she loved whales and she wanted to study them. By the time
I'm sure she's had lots of whales around her.
Oh, yeah.
She lives in fucking Alaska.
Alaska, rural. I can imagine that it would be so beautiful to live in that area.
Yeah. I think I'd like that.
It kind of reminds me of, have you ever watched the movie Whale Rider?
No, but I'm gonna.
Okay. It's a story about the Maori tribe and this little girl who wants to be part of her tribe and she's learning like the male parts of her tribe and she wants to be part of that really badly and they won't let her because she's a girl and it's just a really great indie movie.
So it's like the plot of the new Predator film.
Oh, okay. Interesting.
That's the same difference.
Yeah.
Yeah, and there's another one about eagles, like eagle hunting. There's like a girl who was in a tribe she got really good at eagle hunting.
Yeah, I love that movie. I think I told you about it. Yeah. The Eagle Huntress.
Yeah.
Yeah. She's like a 12-year-old. So that's a documentary, just, yeah.
Yeah, there's like girls around the world like smashing the patriarchy in their fucking tribes.
I love it.
Yeah, it's fun.
Whale Rider kind of reminds me of this story where it's just a super rural place, her tribe and where she grew up. So Sophie wanted to be a marine biologist. By the time she graduated high school, she received a full scholarship to attend the University of Alaska in Fairbanks, which from Pitcairn Point to Fairbanks is about a 5+ hour flight to get there.
Cool.
Yeah.
Massive over there, isn't it?
It's like it tells you like how big Alaska is and how hard it is to travel across it because it's freezing and blows my mind. Rural. It's amazing.
Yeah.
She was the first person in her family to attend university.
Yeah.
Yay.
So am I.
Really? Nice.
Yep.
Cool.
Yep.
Amazing. Good job.
I can't stress how poor my family were. My mum was born in a caravan. We were fucking really poor. I've been a social climber.
You have. Look where you are now. It's amazing. I love it.
Yep. Thanks, mate.
So Sophie, she may have found it pretty hard to acclimate in life in Fairbanks when she moved there in 1990 to start university. It was a complete culture shock from the small rural area that she grew up in. Obviously, I can't imagine.
You grew up around 70 people. Right. Like, imagine how many different, like, nationalities she would meet.
Yeah.
And just people from different places, like, for a start.
People from different places, even technology, like computers and cars and things like that.
Just even ideas.
Right.
Yeah, like phones. Like, I remember when I first went to university. When I moved to London, that was the first time I had ever hung out with a Muslim person.
Mm-hmm.
Before that, never.
Yeah.
There's like 4 black people in Andover, and I think I could name all of them. One of them was my cousin. The culture shock was insane.
It's so interesting because I had the exact opposite experience. I grew up in a bad neighborhood in the middle of the city in St. Paul, Minnesota. And then when we moved to Ireland, it was the middle of nowhere. Everyone looked and sounded the same. And that was a culture shock to me.
Where did you move to in Ireland?
A tiny, tiny village in Galway called Clomber.
So did everyone have like the Galway haircut, or like the Galway shoes?
Well, no, but everyone was farmers.
You came in with your fancy ways.
Yeah. My with your fancy city ways life.
And your sunny D.
Yeah.
And your jolly ranches.
Oh, man. Yeah. So quite the opposite to you. But okay. So Sophie, she, in order to acclimate, she joined several student groups and she spent the next year in the city making friends and getting through her studies. But I think it was hard at first. So halfway through her second year, she had to have orthodontic work. Can relate. So she decided and I think you can relate too. She decided to take a break from school. I think she had to have jaw surgery.
Oh my God. Yeah. I had jaw surgery and I swear to God, I tell my friends, I mention it to my friends about once a year and they go, oh my God, you've never told me that. And I'm like, I have. I really, really have mentioned it.
Right. I remember.
Thanks, Rach.
So yeah, she had to have orthodontic work, so she decided to take a break from school. She also had to pay for it, and also I can relate, it's an expensive thing to pay for. I'm still paying for it.
It's a full-time job, right? Paying for that.
Pretty much, yeah. So she took a break from school, and she returned home to Pitcairn Point, where she worked as a teaching assistant to help pay for her surgery. However, she would return to Fairbanks every few weeks or, you know, every once in a while because that's where her orthodontic appointments were. And she also wanted to keep her friendships continuing. And so she would return every couple of weeks or every couple of months just to, like, keep those things going.
She seems like she's willing to work hard.
Yeah.
For what she wants.
So hardworking. And there's pictures of her. She's always smiling. She just seems like a really lovely, amazing person and hardworking and just like that. Yeah. Like, she's really, like, going for life. She's the first person to go to university. Yeah. She's coming back. She's a teaching assistant. She's really trying hard. So in April of 1993, Sophie was spending the weekend doing just that. She had taken a flight from Pitcairn Point back to Fairbanks, where she would stay with her friend Shirley in the Bartlett Hall student dorm rooms. And this is where she would normally stay with her friend Shirley when she would come back, because she wanted to save money, so she would just stay with a friend.
Mm.
Shirley lived on the second floor of the building, which was a woman's only floor. Sophie's orthodontic appointment was on the Monday, so she flew in on the Saturday. So the two spent that Saturday night hanging out around campus and catching up with each other, and they saw other friends. The second night, Sunday, April 25th, 1993, Shirley wanted to spend time with her boyfriend, so Sophie went out with a group of friends. Sophie returned to Shirley's dorm room around midnight, where she, Shirley, and Shirley's boyfriend Noah had some food together. He ordered pizza for everyone.
Aww.
Sophie asked Shirley where was a good spot to go have a cigarette, and it was below freezing that night. Again, this is Alaska, and even though it's April,
yeah,
it was freezing that night. So Shirley told Sophie that rather than going outside, Sophie should go smoke in this little room. It was like a tub room, which was a room off of the bathroom, like the main girl's bathroom on that floor.
Okay.
She told her to go smoke in there because it had good ventilation and she probably wouldn't get in trouble.
So is that just like the girl's bathroom would be like a shower room?
Yeah.
And then that's the room with the bathtub in?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. When Sophie went to smoke, Shirley and Noah had plans to go back to Noah's dorm room where they were going to spend the night, and that was in another building. They left around 1:30 a.m. As they left, Shirley left a note on her door, and she left the door unlocked for Sophie. The note said that she had gone and that she'd be back in the morning. When Shirley
was so cute and relatable.
Yeah, like, I know.
I stay with friends and they would be like, I'm going to stay with my boyfriend and you can have my room.
Yeah.
Like, you know, just people being nice.
Right. I remember doing that when I was at uni, and I had a friend come stay, and my friend had gone home for the weekend. She was like, oh, your friend could just stay in my room. And
I would do that all the time when I lived in London.
Right.
So.
Yeah.
Yeah. You're like, sure, someone can have my bed. I don't care.
Right.
Like, it's just really free and easy because yeah. Drunk and young.
And you're 19 and everyone's friends and everyone's friendly and
everyone's
sharing
welcome.
Things. And that's just how it was.
You don't go to bed at 9 p.m. anymore.
Yeah. So when Shirley returned in the morning, she was somewhat annoyed to find that the door was still unlocked. The note that she had left was still out. The TV and lights were still on and the bed was still made, as if nobody had come back that night. So she was a little annoyed. So she was like, where's Sophie? She went through the bathroom shower stalls and she called out Sophie's name. So I was looking through several articles. I was watching, there's a video on YouTube that kind of recounts what happened. And this is the only place where they say this. So they stated that when Shirley called out into one of the bathrooms, she said, Sophie, are you here? And somebody responded, yeah, I'm here.
Oh, that's creepy.
Yeah. So it could have just been somebody else that misheard her and was just like, yeah, I'm here. Like, it was the shower room. So there's probably some noises.
It's uni. Yeah. That's a difficult one. Like, it doesn't necessarily have to be someone being a dick.
Right.
And it definitely doesn't need to be her.
Yeah.
It could just be a mistake.
Right.
Or, hello?
Yeah.
Like, is someone shouting?
Yeah.
Like, hello? Yeah.
So Shirley accepted that and she went on with her morning. She took a shower. She got ready for her day. She went back to her dorm room. She left another note for Sophie when she went out to class, or she just went out for the day.
This is 1993, so nobody has a mobile phone.
Nobody. And they're 19 years old. They're from rural Alaska. Nobody's flashy and has technology to keep in touch with each other.
No. If you can't find someone, you'd be like, well, they know where I live.
Mm-hmm.
They know where I am going to class. So they'll find me between those two places at some point.
You leave notes or you tell somebody to tell somebody that what was going on.
Yeah. If you see Sophie, I'm going to be in the bar at 5.
Right. Kind of missed that.
Yeah. It's nice, isn't it? It was a simpler time.
Right. So, however, When Shirley returned in the early afternoon again, everything was still as she had left it. The second note was still there and the room was still untouched. That's when she began to grow concerned. Shirley began asking around the dorm building if anyone had seen Sophie. Nobody had. She even called Sophie's orthodontic appointment, where they told her that Sophie had never showed up. Shirley also discovered that Sophie had missed her flight because she was supposed to go to her orthodontic appointment and then fly back to Pitcairn's Point. She didn't show up for her flight either.
Very clever to check that those things.
Yeah, good friend. Good friend, Shirley.
Clever.
At around 3 p.m. that afternoon on April 26th, janitors were doing their rounds cleaning Bartlett Hall. When they entered the second floor bathroom, the tub room, that's where they found Sophie's body in the small tub. Or where Shirley had suggested that Sophie go smoke. That's where her body was found. Sophie had clearly been in a brutal attack. She was sexually assaulted. She had several stab wounds and she died from a gunshot wound to the back of her head.
Fucking hell.
Yeah, it was brutal.
That's loud.
Mm-hmm. But we're going to get into that a little bit. The police were immediately called, and it was around this same time that Shirley was calling around asking where Sophie was. She saw police around campus and she was like, what's going on? So imagine that friend and being like, oh shit, I think that could be related.
Yeah, I mean, your stomach would just fall out of your ass if you saw police and you knew your friend was missing.
So she was finally informed when police were doing their rounds in the dorm and they were questioning students. And they made it to Shirley's room to question her and Noah. So Sophie's body and the crime scene was examined and they questioned Shirley. Shirley told them everything that had happened that night, including that as she left with Noah, there were people still hanging out in the hallways. She recognized most people, but there was one guy that she locked eyes with that she didn't recognize. And I feel like this was another thing where it was like, I read this in one article and I couldn't really find it anywhere else. But I feel like that was Shirley's like antenna being like,
oh yeah,
who's this weirdo? Sense. Just getting a weird vibe. Locking eyes with him.
Especially in retrospect.
Yes.
Like,
yes.
You're like, well, it was probably nothing. And then you're like, oh no, he was creepy.
Yeah, right. So she didn't recognize that guy. She did tell police that. Police had difficulty interviewing students in Bartlett Hall in the following days. The security was very lax for the 8-story, 300-person building. It was 8 stories. There were 300 students.
Yeah, that's a lot of people.
And visitors could come and go as they pleased.
That's a girls-only dorm, but her boyfriend was allowed there. No, like, it doesn't seem like there's no boys allowed there. There's just no boys living there.
It was just that floor that was all girls. And that's normally how dorms are.
Yeah, so it's easy to just go down a set of stairs and you're in the girls-only dorm.
Right. And they did say, like, sometimes people would be partying and there would be guys and they would use the women's bathroom sometimes because it was like, oh, it's on the same floor. I'm not going to go all the way upstairs and use that bathroom. So it was just kind of a regular thing. Mm-hmm. And it was known as the party dorm building. And many of the students were known
girls.
I'm saying it wasn't just girls. It was just that floor that was just girls.
Okay, right. So the whole building was known as the party building.
Yes.
All right.
Yeah. So we can't blame, we can't shame girls for that. It was everyone.
I thought it was the party floor.
No. Yeah.
The girls' floor is the party floor.
You're right. But students were known to swap rooms, stay with each other, and have visitors stay without anyone signing in. There was also criticism after this because obviously a lot of people felt unsafe. And a few years prior, the university, in order to save money, had just taken away most security in dorm rooms like that. And so
now, clap for you. Thanks a lot.
Yeah. So, you know, at normal university dorm rooms, like when you have visitors, they would normally sign in and, you know, there'd be a whole process. But for this, because the university was saving money over those few years, that wasn't happening. So nobody was like signing in and out. It was just kind of chaos for the police to gather everyone and get an interview everyone.
yeah.
In the week that followed, investigators interviewed as many people as they could, but due to the lack of security, and it was also the end of the exams and the semester, so it was even more
people
busy.
Are super transient. They're just in and out. Like, right. I'm going home to visit my parents. I'm going to visit my friend. Mm-hmm. I'm seeing my boyfriend. Yeah. I'm out of here.
Yeah, I'm going home for the summer. I just finished my last exam. I'm having a party.
I'm having
a bunch of friends over. Yeah. All of that.
Yeah.
So
they could
not get everyone, and they missed out on a lot of potential interviews that could have held important information for the investigation. So that was one big point that led to them not really getting anywhere.
Mm-hmm.
The other point was they did have DNA. There was a lot of DNA that was left behind, both on Sophie's body and around the crime scene. Evidence was successfully collected. However, at the time, in 1993, DNA evidence was not used at all in Alaska. It just was not a thing that they did. I think it was starting to
definitely not in Alaska.
Yeah, it was starting to be in other parts of the country, but Alaska was still a little bit behind in those kinds of processes. So they just didn't even consider it.
Would there be an argument, do you think, to say, because it's like tribal or indigenous, that they didn't either have as much money or didn't care as much? Or do you think it's just generally like Alaska's a bit behind? Or is it because it's more indigenous?
I do think, and going back to our very first episode that I did in talking about missing and murdered indigenous women, that was part of it.
Because I know you were saying they have tribal police, right?
Yeah, that wasn't really relevant because it happened in Fairbanks. So, but just the fact that her family did live 5+ flight hours away. So it's not like they could keep on top of the police and keep bothering them or show their faces very much. So that was an element of like just a little bit left behind in this. So due to both the difficulty of interviewing witnesses or potential suspects and the difficulty in matching evidence to anyone in the area, investigators were left with dead ends and no leads for the next several years. Investigators routinely returned to the case over the next decade. So they went back to it in the late 1990s. As DNA procedures advanced, they tested her evidence around that time, but nothing came up. And then again, in the 2000s, they came back to it. Police also, there's this article that I read that was written at that time, and it was like, oh, there's this new thing called the internet, and police are using it.
Police are using the internet to solve crimes.
police used a new thing called the internet in the early 2000s to seek any information from the public. So it seemed like they were doing their due diligence of returning to the case and doing as much as they could with what tools that they had at the time.
She's still a young girl that's been brutally murdered in a university town where there's lots of young girls that could potentially be brutally murdered. Like, you don't want a fucking predator.
Yeah.
Of young girls in a university town. That's just a recipe for multiple disasters. Right. So it seems like something that they'd want to nip in the bud if that guy is still out there.
Yeah, they also...
He could be responsible for loads of other crimes.
Exactly. And they also did say, like, the university had gotten really bad press from this. So the police were probably getting pressure from the university, from the family, from everyone involved. However, nothing came up over those years, the 90s and the early 2000s. Sophie's family were left without answers for almost 30 years.
Fucking hell.
Yeah.
I can't wait to get this motherfucker nailed. I'm excited already.
In 2018, there was a break. A new investigator, Randy McFerrin, had taken over Sophie's case, and he had heard about the groundbreaking technology called genetic genealogy that solved the Golden State
Randy.
Killer case.
Yes, Michelle McNamara.
Yes, Paul Holes.
Yes, Paul Holes.
And what do you know? It proved successful, and the pool of suspects the police had was narrowed way down to a match. A woman had sent in her DNA, or, you know, she had done the whole genealogy, like, thing.
Oh my god, everyone do it now.
And it was her nephew.
You fucker.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. The pool of suspects was narrowed way down to a match of a man called Stephen H. Downs. So a little bit about Downs. At the time, he lived in the Bartlett building, the same building as Shirley.
I thought he would live there.
Mm-hmm. He actually lived with another man who was a security guy, and that guy had been let go. And there's a little bit of... So during this investigation, there were other men that could have been suspects, but because of this, the genetic genealogy, it was just like, no, it's clearly this guy.
Uh-huh.
Downs, at the time in 2018, he was living all the way, the furthest away from Alaska that you could be, on the other side of the country in Maine, which is just completely, okay. If you went across from Alaska.
Yeah, it's New York, right?
Yeah, it's above New York. So he was living in the state of Maine. When police went to question him, they searched his home in 2019 during the investigation, and they found a .22 caliber gun, which was a match to the bullet that was used to murder Sophie.
No.
Yeah.
Why would you keep that, you fool?
It sounds like a lot of people in Alaska at that time, and even Maine, it's rural. Like, everyone has hunting gear. There's an article of, I think it was a friend or an ex-girlfriend of Stephen Downs, where she was like, I have this picture of him holding this big hunting knife, and I only remember that.
Wow.
Because I have a picture of it, and I took a picture of him holding that. And they say, like, maybe that was used to stab Sophie.
Don't take a picture of yourself holding knives. What are you doing?
Yeah. He was a hunter. He was known to hunting, okay. To be a hunter. And one of the witnesses.
So it's not weird for him to have that stuff.
Exactly. Like, and you don't really get rid of those things either when you are a hunter. You keep those things for a long time.
That is true. But I think the way I was thinking of it was Israel Keyes, who obviously, you know, I'm obsessed with.
Yeah.
He said that when he murdered the Couriers, he had to use a gun on Bill Courier, and that annoyed him because then he knew he had to get rid of that gun.
Right.
Even before DNA, it's like an age-old technique to match a bullet, like the ballistics to match a bullet to a gun is old, way older than DNA. It's like fingerprint technology. So I know this guy is probably not like a fucking serial killing genius. He's probably just a teenage asshole who killed someone, but that gun is always going to be connected to that murder, you know?
Right, exactly. And I mean, but it could have just been that he had a different gun, but it was the same caliber.
Maybe. But I guess he just thought, I'm not going to get caught, so what do I care?
That too. He
Which is
been
typical
caught
thinking.
For over 20 years, so why would he think that having this gun would implicate him? So state troopers brought him in for questioning. And he denied killing Sophie, saying that he had been in his girlfriend's room for most of the evening when Sophie had been killed. Police had, at the time in 1993, also questioned him, and he had said almost exactly the same thing, that he was partying with his girlfriend and his friends. And this is the most important point. He said he had never met Sophie, and he had never set foot on the second floor.
You're an idiot.
Yeah. When they interviewed him again in 2019, he had suggested that maybe there were soldiers from a nearby fort who were probably responsible because they often hung out around the building. So I feel like he had just spent time mulling it over.
Did they steal your DNA?
But he had spent time mulling over, what will I tell the police if they ever came to my door? And it is true. I mean, there was a military base in Alaska. There is a military base in Alaska. So to suggest soldiers could have been a legitimate thing. But despite his statement of having never set foot on the second floor, Downs' DNA was a match to the sample taken from Sophie's body.
This is it. DNA. Whatever you say, DNA.
Yeah.
Like, it doesn't matter. I'm like fucking Johnny Cochran over here. If the glove fits, you must acquit. Yeah. But whatever you say, DNA.
In less than 24 hours of questioning and taking Downs' DNA, they took a swab from his mouth, he was arrested for the suspicion of murder of Sophie Sergey. At this point, Downs was 44 years old. So this is kind of goes against what you were saying, where he was He's not in his 70s. He was not that much older than us, actually.
Wow. Can you imagine?
Yeah. He was
that could be your husband.
No.
No, but I'm saying, like, someone our age could go out with a 44-year-old,
right,
and then the police knock at your door and be like, arresting him for a girl he murdered in college.
Imagine. So yeah, he was 44 years old. He was extradited to Alaska for the hearing, which was set to begin in April 2020, but obviously due to the pandemic, it was postponed. The trial happened on February 9th, 2022, where jurors heard from people who were at the dorm on the night of the crime. They heard from forensic experts and from law enforcement. And just to go back to what you said, like, about the gunshot wounds and stuff like that, and hearing that, that would have been a loud noise. Mm. But because it was known as a party dorm, there was so much noise going on. And that's what some of the witnesses who they brought to court said. It was like, it was a loud night. People were partying.
Yeah.
There were sounds and people heard things, but nobody really thought much of it. Jury deliberated for 20 hours over 4 days, and they found Stephen Downs guilty of sexual assault in the first degree and guilty of murder in the first degree.
What the fuck?
Yeah. The sentencing is actually on the day that this episode comes out.
No! Yes. That's incredible. Yeah.
He hasn't received his punishment.
Wow, so, do Alaska have the death penalty? Do you reckon it's on the table?
Well, he still could possibly appeal as well, because his defense has always said, like, there could have been other people that have done this. There's other people implicated.
Dude, his best defense would have been, yep, we had consensual sex and then I walked away and I don't know what happened after that.
And that
would have been the perfect defense.
Yeah, and that is...
not perfect, but...
right.
You know.
That is what the defense eventually sat with, which was like, oh, I had sex with her, but then I had nothing to do with it, and that's why my DNA is there.
It was a one-night stand. I left her after that. She must have been murdered after that.
Yeah. Why lie that you never stepped foot on the second floor?
Exactly. Clearly. He's already fucked that defense. If he was a clever man, he would have imagined that defense before anything even came to his door.
Exactly. So, yeah, the death penalty is not in Alaska, so he might not be on it. But as you're listening to this...
I wouldn't have thought that, you know.
It's because of, from what I'm seeing right now, and I could be wrong on this, but it looks like because of Alaska being such a large indigenous populated state, that they don't want to give the death penalty. Racial disparity, basically, is what led to the ban of the death penalty in Alaska.
Yeah, that makes perfect sense.
So, yes, I am telling listeners and us, this is a reminder for us on Monday or whenever you're listening to this, to go and see it. The sentencing is decided on September 26th and 27th, 2022. So that's this week. So go find out.
Okay, well, I'm going for life without. I hope he gets life without. Fuck that guy.
Yeah, and I would very strongly think that he's going to appeal whatever sentence he gets.
Yeah, but DNA. Just so you did it. There's no getting out of it. Like, unless the... oh, and this reminds me. Unless the prosecution did a Brady violation, as in didn't give across evidence that he should have given, or they fucked up the prosecution, then you just bang to rights.
Yeah. There was a little bit of that from my research where they... this is so stupid, but I think one of the defense was like, oh, he didn't agree to a swab DNA, and it's like,
oh, shut up. They could have got it off you anyway.
No,
they could have got a search warrant for that, right? Like, grow up.
Yeah. And I think the other thing too was, like, there was rumors that he didn't have a 22 caliber at the time, and that, you know, he had a picture of him with a knife and that wasn't accurate to the kind of person he was, blah blah blah. Like, there's all kinds of things like that that are
hearsay that they said, throw it out.
Yeah. So anyways, that's what's happening. He was found guilty for both counts of sexual assault and for murder. The victim's wow. two brothers listened to the verdict remotely from St. Mary's. Her family are in rural territories, and so for them to come back and during the pandemic was just a big deal. So a lot of them couldn't even come to court to see what happened. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and so her brothers listened remotely from St. Mary's in the Yukon River Delta. Her older brother, Alexei, said that he feels relieved and that he had forgiven the perpetrator years ago. He is Russian Orthodox, which are very religious. And he said, like, that's what helped me, or, you know, my faith tells me that I should forgive people. And he said, I forgave him for what he did, but I will never forget.
Wow, what a grown up. That's so unlike me.
Yeah.
I would hold on to that shit forever.
Yeah, truly. The day after the court proceedings on February 10th, Sophie's family and other... Actually, I don't know if her family was there, but there's a news story and you could go watch the video. It's very beautiful. Community Aww. Members held a vigil outside the courtroom in Fairbanks. They held candles and posters that said justice for Sophie, never forget, and 345 months. They yeah. sang and they held a drum circle because she was from the Yupik tribe. And so they sang nice. in their language. And it's so, like, I cried watching it because.
Oh, that would end me.
Yeah. The song that they sang was about a mother losing her child and saying, like, when will you come back, or why won't you come back? Those who gathered shared stories and messages of hope. Janelle Griffin Chapin, an advocate for the Alaska Native Women's Resource Center, said she had been waiting for this day for a long time. She said, many of us that grew up in our Native communities, we grew up hearing stories about our women disappearing or dying under mysterious circumstances and never getting justice or never having answers for what happened or where they went missing or how to be accountable for their murder. And for someone to have justice in a family and have closure means a lot to our families. So it was a big deal for everyone in the Indigenous community that this had happened.
Yeah.
That is the story of Sophie Sergei, and I encourage everyone to go follow along with the sentencing this week or whenever you're listening.
Yes. That was incredible. What a great story.
Yeah.
Well done.
Very sad. It is a sad story, and it's so sad to...
Yeah, it's shit, but it's so solvable.
Right, exactly. I'm glad that it was solved.
She was sexually assaulted. That was a really brutal murder. Like, mm-hmm. you have to think, was that the only murder he did?
Mm.
Doesn't yep. sound like a one-off, does it?
It really doesn't.
At all. It's kind of brazen. He shot her
yeah.
in a dorm.
Yeah.
So he must be a bit fucking unhinged.
And
that he doesn't care if someone hears a gunshot. I need to know if he has done other stuff.
Yeah.
That's what I really want to know.
44
and I'm
years
sure
old.
That now his...
There's time and space you for just, him to confess or okay, so, for him to be matched to anything else.
How old was he then, at the time then?
So he must have been
young.
Around the same age. If he was living in the dorm, that means that he was around the same age. So between 18 and 22.
Okay, that is your start a murder.
Mm-hmm.
You've done other stuff.
Yeah.
I was going to say, at 44, like, his murder spree isn't even over yet, really.
Oh, actually, I did read an article about how he became a nurse in Maine. And in 2016...
Oh, that is bad.
Yeah. In 2016, he had a couple of complaints against him from other nurses who had said that he had said inappropriate things to them.
Oh, God.
So look into it, people. Like, let's look into this guy.
Oh, let's get other people. Like, there's got to be other families that can get some justice from this, like, 100%.
Yeah, definitely.
Ugh. Scum. Mm-hmm. Scum, 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 scum. Yeah.
Watch this space.
Crazy.
Thanks for listening this week, everyone.
Oh my god, I need a wind down.
Yeah. Well, speaking
that
of.
That was tense.
Next week, we are just going to have a little true crime chat. I feel like we spend so much time at the beginning of our episodes talking about what we love to watch and listen to.
Yeah.
And if any listeners want to ask us any questions or...
Go for
talk about what they've been watching or listening to. We would love to hear it. yeah, we will also be following this case and we'll try and give an update there as well.
Definitely. And the next week's episode, we're going to cover a bit of Adnan Syed.
Yes.
Because he has been released.
Yes. Big news.
From prison, which is incredible.
Yep.
Massive. And he got released from prison on the day that the Queen died. So I missed the news. And then the next day I was like, holy what now? Yeah. So yeah, I'm going to dig into that and let you know the ins and outs of why he was released, which is, I mean... did you listen to Serial when it first came out?
I was going to say, that is the podcast that I think got everyone into podcasts.
Seminal, right?
Yes.
It was a seminal podcast, but it was the original, it was the OG true crime podcast.
It really was.
It has to be said.
Yeah, let's save this conversation for next time.
Yes, let's. Okay. Well, thanks everybody for listening and rate us and review us and we love you and bye.
Bye. Tell us what you think. Bye. Love ya.
Okay, bye.
Thanks for listening to Transatlantic Crime this week. If you liked what you heard, please rate, review, and subscribe.
And if you'd like to follow us on social media, you can find us on Twitter at @TransatCrimePod, Instagram at @TransatlanticCrime, and on Facebook with Transatlantic Crime Podcast.
Thanks, bye.